Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. A man who's brought considerable intelligence to bear in a number of different incarnations at the senior-most levels of the United States government, I'm very pleased to say, is with us to talk a bit about some of his insights into the world in which we find ourselves these days and what we best be doing about it to make sure it doesn't go badly for us. He is Dr. Jack Caravelli. He served as an intelligence analyst in the Central Intelligence Agency, specializing back in the Cold War on what was, about as important as anything at the time, Soviet strategic forces. He was also a member of the White House National Security Council staff, a deputy assistant secretary of the Department of Energy with responsibility for proliferation and threat reduction. These days, he is a managing partner at the Trilateral Group and a visiting professor at the UK Defense Academy. He's also the author of several important books, including most recently The Age of Hatred, Islam, Iran, and the New Middle East. Jack Caravelli, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. It's a great pleasure to have you.
Great pleasure to be here, Frank. Thanks very much.
Well, there's so much to talk about, Jack. I think I'd like to start, though, with your thoughts based, I presume, in part on your now rather frequent exposure to what's going on in Britain as a result of your teaching there, in connection with this business of Britain's referendum on whether it should exit the European Union, the so-called Brexit. What do you make of the vote? What led up to it, and where do you think it leaves Britain at the moment?
Yes. So far this year, I've made 5 trips to London. So I think I'm in touch with what's been going on and, you know, see the arc of, I guess, public opinion, you know, since January. The shock to the system, as it were, you know, is reflected in all the papers that act as if the sky is falling, simply was the expectation that although the vote was expected to be close, that the majority would vote to remain in the EU. And as you know, Frank, that's exactly what did not happen. Now we are into historic, unprecedented territory. There's never been a nation that has voted to leave the European Union. But I think the reasons for that are not hard to find. I think some of that goes back to, you know, a real growing sense of frustration among the majority of UK voters that the EU was not serving their interests. Our mutual good friend, Dr. Liam Fox, the former British Defense Secretary, told me in London a few weeks ago that over 50% of the laws that the UK has to enforce come from Brussels, from the EU, and not from the British Parliament. You know, that really, you know, I think caught public opinion and angered them, as well as the, you know, clear failure now for well over a year of the Europeans writ large to control the migration problem. So I think there are a number of factors that came together. The financial markets, as you know, have been tumultuous, in part because of the unexpected nature of all this. But I think we should all take a collective deep breath. You know, the UK is still an important nation. It's still a member of NATO. There are problems to be solved and issues to be addressed. But, you know, there's no reason to think that if cool heads on sort of both sides of the English Channel prevail, that we can't get, you know, a good transition and one that, you know, really does not jeopardize, among other things, the Western alliance.
That's certainly to be hoped for, Jack. I guess one of the countervailing pressures might be that there seems to be a certain appetite in at least some quarters on both sides of the pond, I think it's fair to say, that Britain should be punished for what it's done here, for sort of countermanding the direction towards supranationalism, as I think you've put it, and creating you know, a rift that, well, it, frankly, others might be tempted to follow in exiting the EU as well. Give us a sense of how that looks from your perspective. Is that, in fact, in play?
Well, I think it is in play, certainly in some quarters, if you read the statements coming out of different nations on the continent. I think that if those, you know, in France or Germany or elsewhere, you know, would try to impose, quote-unquote, any punishments on the UK for the vote, that would be extremely short-sighted, totally unhelpful to all sides. And I think, among other things, I think as you were implying, it certainly could backfire on sort of the punishers, simply because not only in the UK is there, you know, deep concern about how the EU operates in the heavy-handed way that in which it tries to govern its members. So, you know, we are seeing now, and the UK vote may only be the tip of the iceberg, Frank, in terms of others, perhaps in France, in Italy, in the Netherlands, who may push very hard for similar referendums. So the UK vote a month or 2 months or three from now may look like just the, you know, the tip of the iceberg. So we are really into uncharted territory. But for those, to get to your question, who would punish the Brits for some reason for having democracy work, you know, I think is going to backfire and serves no good interest.
Well, I think it certainly doesn't serve that of the British people or our interests, which I think are in favor of sovereignty and accountable government, limited government at that. And indeed, Jack Caravelli, one of the things that Donald Trump argued in the immediate aftermath of this vote is that there are certain parallels between what impelled a majority of the British voters to approve this referendum for withdrawing from the EU and popular sentiment here in the United States as well. Do you see it that way? And in particular, I guess I'd ask you about the problem that I'll be talking about shortly with Dr. Charles Jacobs involving immigration and what it implies for our country, not just for those in Europe, including the Brits.
Yes, well, I think the parallels are not perfect. They're not exact, but I think Trump makes a, you know, a valid point. You know, the parallels, I think, you know, to some extent, and it's hard to quantify, of course, but the parallels do exist, beginning with, as you mentioned, the immigration problem. It's a very sore point for the Brits, has been in all my visits. I keep hearing the same things from people on all parts of the political spectrum, that they realize there is deep concern about the growing Muslim population in the UK. Of course, that's a much smaller nation than ours, both in size and population. But when you extend that parallel to the United States, obviously, Donald Trump, whether one likes his political style or not, has touched and reached into a deep vein, I think, in American, you know, observations that, you know, our immigration problems are considerable and just as frustrating. Again, you know, with the powers that be in our government today, those problems are not being addressed, they're not being solved. And, you know, Trump, again, setting aside style, deserves, I think, considerable credit, you know, for reaching in, touching that nerve. And anyone who would blindly or, you know, put their head in the sand, you know, perhaps in the Democratic Party and think that those parallels don't exist, they're probably whistling past the graveyard. Now, if Trump can exploit it fully in a general election, obviously we don't know. But those parallels are there. They're powerful. And they should not be ignored.
Do you anticipate that the United Kingdom will come apart over all of this?
You know, I think on the first, I think there's a very real chance, not just in my judgment, but in those of colleagues I respect in London, certainly at the very least, that Scotland will push very hard for a second referendum. As you know, there was one in 2014, you know, to separate from the UK and, you know, to turn around and try to join the EU. I think there's easily at least a 50% chance that will happen. And, you know, what we saw from the vote last week, you know, the Scottish voters who at least turned out on Brexit, you know, did vote in a large majority, you know, to remain. Their desire was to remain in the EU. So that's still an unresolved problem. In terms of future leaders, you know, again, if I had a crystal ball, I would say and this is just sort of the common wisdom, and we've seen that that is far from perfect. Obviously, Boris Johnson gets a lot of press, a lot of attention. He's flamboyant. He is intelligent. I don't know if he's got the leadership qualities the Tory party, the Conservative Party needs.
At the moment, particularly, yeah. We'll be watching it closely, as I know will you, Jack Caravelli. We'll be speaking with you again in a moment about nuclear deterrence, another area of your expertise, right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.